Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance. We are broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. 650. That's the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at dunbarlumber.com. This hour of Canucks Talk is brought to you by Rack Steel. Rack Steel has the expertise to get you operating faster with forklifts and pallet racking in stock. Visit them online at racksteel.com. So as I mentioned, Ian McIntyre publishing a couple of different pieces in the last 24 hours. Last night, one, a lengthy interview with Quinn Hughes, where some really interesting commentary from the captain about this season. I think what a lot of people have focused on is Quinn Hughes again raving about the work that Rick Tocchet has done, also assistant Adam Foote, reiterating and very explicitly how much he wants Rick Tocchet back behind the bench next year, how he thinks that can be a key part of the team's success. And we can get into that. It is interesting. It is, of course, noteworthy. Anytime the captain is coming out that publicly and that, you know, going above and beyond just the boilerplate stuff to really, really vouch for the coach. There's another part of it, though, that I found fascinating. And it goes to speaking about Quinn Hughes views his relationship with this organization, which, of course, is a big deal. Something we talk about a lot, something we kind of speculate and wonder about a lot. And it's the idea of IMAC writes, Hughes told Sportsnet he feels there's an obligation attached to the C the Canucks gave him. This team named me captain, and I feel obligated to be a successful team here, Hughes told Sportsnet. That weighs heavily on me. I want to do something here. Like, they made me captain. Are you going to do what you said you would do? Are you going to help the situation and make a successful organization? Obviously, one guy can't do that, but I definitely feel obligated where that weighs heavy on my mind that they entrusted me with that. It's that language of obligations or feeling obligated that I find really fascinating coming from Quinn Hughes. You know, we've talked a lot now about in the new NHL and the focus on star power. What do we call it between the pact between a star player and a team, a partnership,
partnership, right? Covenant.
You're going into business in a sense when you have an elite player like Quinn Hughes and you're signing him long term, or you're making him your captain. It is a partnership more than a employer employee relationship. And when you think of it in those terms, of course, Quinn Hughes, like that you enter into a business partnership with someone, you have certain obligations, they have certain obligations. And I found it just a really kind of fascinating, almost explicit acknowledgement of that relationship, how it is different for Quinn Hughes than other players. And almost just him, I don't want to say he's like rattling any cages here or anything, but talking about, I think by virtue of him talking about his obligations to the team, he's also kind of implicitly reminding everyone else that what's implied there is certain other obligations they have to him. You know what I mean? Like, both sides have obligations that they need to take care of. I think you would be very hard pressed to look at Quinn Hughes this season and say he hasn't lived up to his end of the bargain.
No,
he absolutely has. He has done everything you could have asked for,
including laying his body absolutely on the line.
100%. And I'm not trying to say, and he's implying that the organization hasn't lived up to their end of the bargain or anything like that. But to me, that's the context for his commentary about Quinn Hughes.
Well, let's be real though. Somebody hasn't.
Elias Pettersson?
No, I don't know if that's the answer.
But that's part of the answer, isn't it?
I mean, sure. And he talks about it a little bit. How they need some guys who didn't play well this year
kind
to play
of
better.
Is like wink, wink, nudge, nudge, kind of thing. You know, it doesn't take a lot of reading between the lines. But yeah, that's what I think. Once you kind of understand that obligation concept, it makes a lot of the rest of the article make a lot of sense, right? And he's kind of saying, yeah, like the organization is obligated to give us a coach that can help us get to where we want to go. He thinks that's Rick Tocchet. The other best elite players on the team are obligated to have really big summers and take their preparation seriously, like I do, like Nathan MacKinnon does, like Sidney Crosby does.
Yeah,
that's pretty interesting coming from the captain, because I think we're going to hear a lot, and we heard from Patrick Alvin already to Ian McIntyre. We can get to that in a second about how the preparation needs to change for the team generally, but for Elias Pettersson specifically.
Yeah. So look, I mean, Quinn Hughes is a super, super competitive guy.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a chip on his shoulder too, right? Like, it's not just this obligation that he feels. It's also a challenge, right? He thought people around the league wouldn't view him as a captain, wouldn't view him as a great leader. He's not the most fiery guy. He sometimes looks like he's experiencing deep existential pain over the course of games when he's sitting on the bench. But he can and does, you know, lead. He's as good a captain as you'll find in the league, frankly, right? People who know and have worked closely with Sidney Crosby drop that comp within the Canucks organization. I mean, incredible, incredible stuff. And, you know, more than anything, man, this guy wants to win. This guy wants to win. The organization knows this. And the organization, I think, does feel those obligations in a very real way. Like, you know, I don't think they need a reminder.
Sure.
Operation Quinn, Keep Quinn Hughes is a go. Operation Win for Quinn. Yeah, maybe that's what
that's a good one. I like that.
Operation Win for Quinn.
That's nice.
Yeah. Is
it's like an inverse of one of the tanking slogans.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Sell the future. Yeah. Oh, God. Now I'm just thinking about like a decade of Canucks hockey operations strategy is like a tariff on winning. Anyway, so with the Operation Win for Quinn is a go, and this organization is going to be all in to try and get back to, you know, not just competing for a playoff spot, but trying to build a contending team as soon as next season. It's an incredibly tall order, right? Make no mistake. And even as Quinn alludes to, like, we have good players who need to perform better, but we do need a couple pieces, right? I thought that was a fascinating part of his commentary to IMAC. Like,
The point is, if we get Rick back and add a piece or two, we can be very successful. So again, acknowledging we need to add some pieces and we need Rick Tocchet back. Quinn Hughes is kind of doing his own Canucks to-do list here for the offseason.
100%
like, add pieces. Get Rick Tocchet signed because he's awesome. Get Adam Foote back with him because he's awesome too. And we can win playing how they want us to play. And then the other part of that also is, as we're talking about, he says, after the season, I think there will be different conversations about how we can get better and taking advantage of the summer, because we do need guys to elevate their training and come back better. Goes on to compare how, you know, he's seen how Sidney Crosby does it, how Nathan MacKinnon's do it. That's why he tries to train the way he does. And then he says, because the league gets better every single year, we need everyone to understand that and be hungry. So again, another big focus on what the team can do from over the summer. And again, really, I mean, he's talking about the whole team. We all know who number one is, Elias Pettersson, right? That the preparation, work put in the summer, all of that has been a huge talking point from the upper levels of the organization. And not hard to read between the lines and see what Quinn Hughes is talking about
internally
here.
Internally, there was a feeling that Pettersson was insufficiently prepared this season. That can't happen again. In fact, you know, look, if the organization does decide to do something more dramatic there, I think that'll be the reason. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it'll be part of the reason. I think it'll be, you know, something that ultimately they felt mattered too much that they couldn't compromise on.
Right.
I don't even know that we disagree with that.
No. No, it's to go back to that partnership, like, that's baseline level of obligation.
Yeah.
For the star player on the massive contract, on the richest contract in team history, is that you're doing what Quinn Hughes is talking about here and preparing at an elite level and practicing and putting every ounce of effort you can over the summer to improving and being ready for the season.
Yeah.
That's step one.
Even like setting the tempo, challenging your teammates in practice, you know, like, that's not fun stuff to do for anybody, right? You don't want to come in necessarily on a like rainy Tuesday when it's been, the day after a hard game and have one of your teammates, like someone you will literally go into the corner for, right? Cross-checking your ribs in a one-on-one battle. But, like, you kind of need to do that every day. You need to have guys that set that tempo. One thing I've sort of heard is I think Marcus Pettersson's been, like, a godsend from the coaching staff's perspective for that.
Interesting, for setting the tone specifically in practice.
Because, you know, when they lost JT Miller, right? Like, that was I mean, no one will be surprised by that, but that was something that JT Miller did at an elite level. Right. And so, you know, it's little stuff like that this team needs to embrace again. Because the fact is that these are, I guess this is the other problem that I like run into when I start to unpack and think about these things, Jamie, is like, we went through this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I think we had a reasonable expectation after last season that, you know, this team had learned some of their lessons about how to win in this league, right? They're not a young team anymore, no matter how much Alvin quotes the average age of the lineup, right? Like, they're not. We all know that they're not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't have an elite player who's not in their prime yet.
Nope.
Like, this is not a young core. This is not a young team, at least not materially. They might have, what they really don't have is old guys.
Well, and the youngest key player on the team is the most mature professional, because Quinn Hughes.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's not as if, like, all the young guys need to figure it out. It's like Quinn Hughes is the youngest important player, and he's figured it out.
Yeah, we thought this group had figured it out after last season. I think that was a reasonable thing to believe.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why it hasn't played out that way.
Yeah, it sure hasn't, though.
No, it sure hasn't. And, I think this core group probably has to ask themselves some pretty tough questions. Like, why can we not sustain success? Why, when we have success, does it feel like we're resting on our laurels?
Mm-hmm.
Why is we all need to go have a great summer?
Like, why are we back to the big summer talk?
Why do
don't
we
know that?
Why do we continually take success for granted? And maybe they don't. Like, maybe the answer is we don't. We've been unlucky. We don't. The roster hasn't been good enough. But I've been watching this team. You've been watching this mm-hmm. team. I feel like it's more than that.
Yeah, I certainly do. That's why I have been, the appetite for significant changes is, I think, very prevalent in this market because of all of those reasons, right? And, you know, one thing you said after the JT Miller trade, right? There's always going to be another Nashville game with that player because he's just a volatile player. There's always going to be kind of another incident of some sort. At least that was the conclusion management came to, that we thought we could solve this, but it's just always going to keep cropping up and we have to move past that. I see a similar thing here where if you're just back at the, our practice habits aren't good enough and guys need to have a big summer, and it applies to your best players with the exception of Quinn Hughes, how can you ever have confidence that it's going to go away? You know what I mean? How can you have confidence that you're not going to need to constantly be breathing down the neck of certain players to do all of those things? And look, I'm not saying it's impossible that it could happen, but just you have to have confidence that they're going to learn those same lessons and develop those same habits. I don't know how you make that bet with confidence if that's the bet you decide to make.
Yeah.
It's like, at the very least, it's a massively risky bet to make. If you think that's what's necessary to win a Stanley Cup in this league, and I think that's absolutely correct, that your best players have to have that mindset and that work ethic, you're counting on Elias Pettersson developing it. By your own account, he hasn't yet. And this is a pretty late in his career, and you've gone through multiple cycles of this. So you can make that bet. And you might conclude that the upside is so high that we have to, even if it is a risky bet, that's fine. But I think we should all acknowledge it's a very risky bet at this point.
Yeah, and not just that the upside, you know, I think the other thing you have to factor in there, Jamie, right, is do you actually have a better option?
Sure.
You know, I mean, we talked a little bit about the sort of lack of centermen, for example, in free agency.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it is notable. It is a notable lack of quality talent, right? In this free agent pool relative to, you know, other years, but just like relative to the stakes for the Canucks. I mean, you've got Pettersson, a huge question mark. I mean, would it be fair to say that this show has been like ardently supportive and had an abundance of belief in Pettersson's overall skill level over
yes.
the years? How confident would you put, if I were to say to you, Pettersson returns to the same level that he was at in 2023-24, the first half,
mm-hmm.
as a two-way player, and an 80-point scorer next season, where would you put your percentage, like, out of 100?
Like 15?
15 out of 100?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
What's yours?
No, I...
Like, is that unreasonable?
I had never considered it that way, but, like, once you're putting... No, I think 15 is totally fine.
You can't say, like, 50%. I don't think.
No.
You know what I mean?
No.
I don't think you can call it a coin flip.
So this was a long preamble, and we can get into it more, but I want to move on with a checklist that I was about to do, which is... So Pettersson, huge question mark. Mm-hmm. And I don't even mean from the perspective of, like... Could he be traded? What is his Canucks future? I mean, solely from the perspective of, like, how good is this guy given what we've seen across the last 100 games of his NHL career at this point? How likely is the fringe top five NHL centerman talent that used to be in there or used to be regularly displayed by this guy across 400 plus NHL games to begin his career? How likely is that to come back? 15%, says Jamie Dodd. Quote him.
That's right.
Turn the TikTok camera on. You've got Pugh Suter expiring. Leverage enhanced massively across the last 2 weeks. Right? I mean, who's had a better post-deadline run for on this team than him? And then you've got Filip Hedl, not playing again this season, having sustained another head injury. I mean, first of all, the team already viewed him as best suited to playing on... in the bottom six, right? But also now there's the additional murkiness of his injury status to factor in. No good options in unrestricted free agency. Extraordinarily expensive to acquire on the open market and requiring a massive amount of creativity to land the type of top six body you need. And three massive question marks at center, you know, in terms of what you get next season, or honestly, if any of them will even be back.
Mm-hmm.
It's an enormous challenge. Just the scale of the challenge, like, can't be understated here.
It's really hard. It's really hard. Do you, is the 15% too low? Like, do you think that's unreasonably low?
I honestly, like, I put you a little bit on the spot and I feel bad about
it. No, it's okay. Like, I don't care.
Because I hadn't thought about what was
reasonable. I'm just curious. Like, should I up it to 25? I don't know.
I don't know, man. I don't.
That's the thing. Who can, like. No one knows. It's impossible to know because
I don't think you're wrong. Like, I don't think you're wrong to put it as low as that. I mean, I think it's an individual decision that you can make, but I just, like, I fundamentally look at a guy who this season, you know, his top skating speed was 22.7. He was 54th percentile for speed bursts over 20 miles per hour, according to NHL Edge data, right? And when I go back just two years, his top skating speed was a solid mile and a half higher, 23.3, 94th percentile. And he had 155 speed bursts over 20 miles per hour that season, which was in the 88th percentile. Like, the NHL Edge data used to have, like, they have this radar plot of how you do. And it was, like, completely full the way it is when you look at most elite skaters profiles, MacKinnon, Hughes, McDavid. When you look at it this year, it looks so mid.
Yeah.
Like, incredibly mid. Everything is average. And that's what it feels like when I watch him play. So, I don't know. It's been a long enough stretch here that I don't have a lot of confidence at this point. I'm hopeful that this is a Pierre-Luc Dubois-type situation. But I think if you're like, I don't see that as realistic at all, 15%, I think that's perfectly reasonable. I don't even know how much higher I'd go.
Yeah. Well, that's a cheery thought.
Sorry to the guy eating lunch in his car who wanted us to
like make jokes about classical music instead. Which, fair enough.
Well, look,
Batch is coming up.
Yeah,
that's always
fun. Seems bleak, but we're gonna get Batch on.
The funny thing is that I don't think we came on, we're gonna be really bleak. We're just like winding ourselves up and talking ourselves into it.
I did come in and tell you I hadn't slept well last night.
That's true.
I slept like 2.5 hours. I've been a mess all day, so I think I'm just like taking my crankiness out.
I think we're just like authentically discovering that we're more pessimistic than we thought we were. I think we're in the process of doing that on air. And we're like, oh no, this is horrifying. All right. We'll take a break. Keep your text coming in.
There's good paths forward.
Sure.
They just require an incredible amount of guts and an incredible amount of like projection, right? Like, this team's going to have to play some big bets.
Yep.
With long odds and have them hit. That's
But hey, you know what? That could be really exciting. That could be an exciting process. I'd love to be to see them take some big risks. Big swings.
Because I only see Canucks news now in terms of operations and missions. But I was thinking about calling it Operation Rabbit Out of a Hat.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they're literally going to try and pull off a magic trick.
Yeah.
And we'll see how the prestige
could
goes.
Could be really cool.
In the fall.
Could be really cool. 650, 650.
Or it could be a bird in a cage.
Is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Brendan Batchelor next here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance. We are broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. We're going to get Brendan Batchelor on the line here momentarily. And in fact, he's now ready to join us, the voice of the Canucks here on Sportsnet 650. He's our pal, Brendan Batchelor. What's going on, Batch?
It's a beautiful spring day outside, guys. As I talked about last week, touching grass, a good idea.
Yes.
It's a little bit cloudy out there right now, but you know what? That's okay. That's okay. We need the rain to allow things to grow and renew over the spring.
You're so old. That's like the... Oh, you know what, though? Probably a good thing. Probably a good thing that it's raining.
Well, it is.
I was trying to tie it back into the Canucks.
Doesn't everyone in Vancouver grow up, though, learning that the rain is what makes our city beautiful, so we have to accept it?
No.
What?
No, I don't think people learn that. Did you learn that, Batch?
Well, I think it's true, whether we learned it growing up or not. But I was trying to make this a Canucks tie-in and talk about how, like, yeah, you know, there's some rain right now, but that's what's going to allow the flowers to bloom going forward, guys. So,
but what are you talking about?
I was gonna invite you on and be like, Batch, this has been a pretty gloomy show. Like, give us a ray of sunshine. But now I'm like, what flowers, Batch?
Well, this is the point. We'll have
it's
to wait.
It's just a little rain. It's
bloom.
Been flooding for a decade. It's just a little rain. You're building an ark.
Okay, so the reason I started with this is because Lena told me that my role was going to be in try and brighten things up there.
Well, good
clearly
job.
Not at all succeeded at that.
Way to go. So no, seriously though, Batch, I do want to, like, can you make a bull case for me for this Canucks team going into this offseason?
The case I would make, if we want to make a glass half full case, and let me be clear that this isn't exactly my entire opinion on this, but I'm doing the assigned task that you've given me here, is that things aren't as bad as they seem. This is a team that had a lot of injuries this year, faced a lot of adversity, and some of the things we've seen from them at times this year, not just recently, not just looking back at the Dallas comeback, show that they have some character players in that room and guys that will pull on the rope and guys that can be better. And, you know, I was thinking about the comeback the other night as an example, and it's three of the most consistent players for this team this season that contributed to it arguably the most. Kiefer Sherwood scored the overtime winner. He's had a career year, hit everything that moves, been a really good addition for this team. Pew Suter, whether he'll be back or not remains to be seen, but he scores two goals in the final minute. Connor Garland makes a great play to set up the overtime winner. These guys, and you look at the games played chart for players this year, and they've been three of the guys that have been there through the highs and the lows and the thick and the thin, and basically all of the games, save for a couple. I think there are all three of them up over 70 games. It's only DeBrusk and Bluger that have played every game this year, but you know, sometimes there are years that go against you. And as we all expected coming into this season, there was going to be a regression. Last year, everything went right. Other than the Demko injury and Besser missing game 7, it was pretty much a perfect year in terms of health and in terms of production and shooting percentage and PDO and all of these things that we've discussed. So we were all expecting a regression. We did all talk about it coming into the season. Now, we didn't expect it to be like this, but we also didn't expect to know what the popliteus was when we were having this conversation last summer. Now we do. We didn't expect Dakota Joshua to miss the amount of time that he did, both through injuries and his cancer diagnosis. We didn't expect JT Miller and Elias Pettersson's feud to devolve to the point where one of them was traded out of town and the other one might yet still be. Like, there are so many things. I could write a book about this season alone. So while right now it feels very frustrating, they're not going to the playoffs. And hey, they should have been better this year. They should have still been a playoff team. I don't think anybody here is going to argue otherwise, including people in the organization. It's not truly as bad as it seems right now. And if they have a good summer and make the right moves and complement this roster in the right way, it is very possible for them to have a bounce back year next year. I'm not saying they will. I'm not predicting that. But if we're going glass half full, I think oftentimes when you're in it, it feels a lot worse than it actually is with the benefit of hindsight, if they can dig themselves out of this. And that's going to be the challenge for this management group this offseason.
Your reasons for optimism are Kiefer Sherwood and Pew Suter? That's what you got?
So I think Batch is right that there are a lot of reasons that
$1.6 million
things that happened this year that you shouldn't expect to happen next year. But my only I agree with you, Batch, but my question is that gets them to a playoff team, but not necessarily a contender. You know what I mean? That's my concern, is even with the bounce back, is the ceiling high enough? Because I agree with you. This was a disaster season. There's a lot you can look at and say, well, that should be better next year. But that's my sticking point. Sticking point is, well, okay, but is the ceiling ultimately high enough, even with those bounce back things?
Well, and ultimately that's going to be the question. By the way, you're conveniently leaving out Connor Garland, who I know is one of your favorites, Grant, so I mentioned in that conversation.
Heck yeah.
As well. So it's not just Sherwood and Suter.
No, you're right.
Anyway, the ceiling has been lowered for this team as it is currently constructed right now, because JT Miller is not on this roster, and he was coming into the year and last year. And, with Philip Hedl's injury questions, obviously you have a hole down the middle, and that's a hole they're going to have to try and fill this year, certainly. So as of this moment right now, yes, the ceiling is lower for this team than it was this time last year, certainly. I don't think anybody would argue with that. But that's why I pivoted to talking about how important this offseason is going to be, because that's the expectation for this group. That's the challenge for this management team now, is to get this team back to where we can start talking about them developing into a contender. And I think, this might be easy to say in hindsight, revisionist history, but looking back at last year, there were so many things that did go right that, we can sit here and coming into the year, everybody was talking about, them being in that second tier of contenders and things like that. But were they ultimately, and are they ultimately, even if they add a top six center, a contender right now, or are they still a developing team that's trying to grow their identity to get to that point? Now, ultimately, the ceiling is still there, not as high as it was last year, but if Elias Pettersson gets back to being peak Elias Pettersson, if Thatcher Demko stays healthy and gives you Vezina-esque performances, the results are going to look a lot different next season, even if you change nothing else about this team. And then look at the fact that this management group has already remodeled the blue line. I would imagine they're going to have a really good go at remodeling the forward group and the top six in particular this offseason, and we'll see how lengthy and detailed those renovations are eventually. But as of this moment, the ceiling is lower for sure, but that doesn't mean that they can't raise it again with some smart additions and some good work in the summer. But to get them back to a contender overnight is going to be a very difficult task, but that's the task they have to try and take on here with Quinn Hughes eligible for an extension in 15 months from now?
Yep.
So it's a short-term plan here that you have to execute on, and there's pretty much no margin for error. So, ultimately this is a disappointing result to this season, especially with some of the players you have, the Demkos, the Hughes, the Pettersons, and the ceilings that those players have individually, but they need to find a way to complement those guys, to get the best out of those guys, to keep those guys healthy in such a way that they can reach that ceiling so we can get back to them talking about being a contender. And to do that, they have to surround them with the proper pieces and, you know, try to get the most out of them in that regard. And that's what this summer is going to be all about.
Yeah. A short-term plan for the Vancouver Canucks never fills me with optimism, Batch.
Well, we've been burned by it before, haven't we?
Yeah, a little bit.
Repeatedly across the last decade. All right, look, let's pivot to something that I'm going to be able to talk about without getting crabby. I didn't sleep very well last night, so I've been especially cranky on the radio today, Batch, and I apologize.
That's okay.
I know you know.
Nothing out of the ordinary, Drancer. Yeah. Nothing out of the ordinary.
Looking at sort of the West here and just how this playoff picture is formed, is there a series you're especially looking forward to? And are there any teams that are going into the West where you think you can sort of point to it as like a model for Vancouver to follow here?
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, Colorado-Dallas is the series that I'm most excited for, just because I think that has the greatest stakes of any first-round series, especially in the West, because both of those teams fancy themselves legitimate Stanley Cup contenders, and it will be a massive disappointment for whoever loses that series. So I know it's not official yet that those teams can face each other, but it's trending in that direction. So that's where I look. And, you know, it's probably Colorado if I'm looking at a model that the Canucks can look at in terms of short term, because there are some parallels between the Canucks and the Avalanche. And stick with me on this, because I know Colorado might be a favorite as a cup pick going into the postseason, and the Canucks are not even going to the playoffs at all. But the Avalanche moved on from one of their best players in season, right? They traded Mikko Rantanen in a way. Ultimately, they're going to end up facing him in the playoffs, which is going to be an interesting storyline of its own. But that allowed them to make some other moves. That allowed them to look at their top of their lineup differently and make some acquisitions that have actually arguably made this team a greater threat in the postseason. So adding Martin Natchez, going out and getting Brock Nelson as a couple of examples, adding to their depth a little bit while maybe limiting their ceiling in terms of Rantanen being one of the best players in the game, no longer on their roster. You know, I wonder if there's a light at the end of the tunnel for Canuck fans, for lack of a better term, that, you know, yes, the Avalanche have MacKinnon and Makar and you know, they've got, you know, some incredible pieces to build around, but they in season have made more meaningful changes to their roster, arguably, than any other team in the NHL this year, because you have to remember they also completely gave up on their goaltending, traded both their goaltenders and brought in two new goaltenders. And that has been a big part of, you know, their sort of in season renaissance this year as well. So, you know, that's what I would say, is that from a Canucks perspective, that can give you hope that if you make the right bets, the right decisions, find the right opportunities and the right players on the open market, then, you know, you could retool on the fly and retool relatively quickly. But, you know, as we already talked about, the margin for error on that is so slim when you're trying to thread the needle of going from a non-playoff team one year to, you know, a cup contender that can try and convince its captain to re-sign long-term next year. So that's why, understandably, in Vancouver, we are very hesitant when it comes to, you know, retools on the fly or short-term rebuilds, because they are very difficult to execute. And we've seen past management groups try and fail at doing that. But it is possible, and I think some of the things we've seen from Joe Sakic and Chris McFarland in Colorado lead you to believe that there is a chance, if done properly, that, you know, the Canucks, as much as this seems crazy to say right now, if they have a really good summer, if they hit a bunch of home runs, if they make some great trades and bring in some smart free agent signings that complement their top players, and they make the right decision on Pettersson, and they make the right decision with their goaltending, and all of those things go well, then there is a reality that they could be better off for some of the tough decisions they've made this year, like moving on from JT Miller as an example.
Batch, if you were to sort, right? So call your shot, right? You're saying, talking about hitting home runs. I'm going to ask you to point to left field, center field, right field, and call your shot. What's your shopping list look like? The things you think this team most needs to add for next season?
Well, at the very top of that list is a top six centerman.
Yeah.
Without a shadow of a doubt. And potentially two, depending on what happens with Elias Pettersson and what you decide to do ahead of his no movement clause kicking in July. And, you know, we haven't really had an indication definitively one way or the other from the organization. So I'll be interested to see what sort of an angle Patrick Alvin takes on that in the season ending media availability. But that has to be top of the list, right? You want certainty. I think that's been the problem with this team this year, is the lack of certainty in terms of, well, injuries. Who's going to be in the lineup? Who isn't? Pettersson, is he going to be good tonight or not? Demko, healthy or not? And whatever you can do to get more predictability, clarity, certainty within your roster is going to be important. So solidifying your center ice position is crucial to that. I think they've done a really good job on the blue line, so I don't really have many notes for that area of this team, although they may have to rob Peter to pay Paul to try and address the forward issue, and I'll be interested to see how they go about that, because they do have a pretty good stable of young defensemen now, with DPD and Mancini getting into games and Tom Velander potentially coming as soon as later today or tomorrow, depending on how things go in the Frozen Four. My top two things, I guess, certainty at the center ice position and certainty in the crease has to be the other one. So do you believe Thatcher Demko with a strong summer can come back? I think ultimately the best route for this team is going to be to bring both Lankinen and Demko back next year, because that just gives them depth and gives them security, so that if Demko gets back to a great level, then great, he can play at that great level, but he doesn't have to play a ton of games, because you trust Kevin Lankinen to come in and play as well. And if Demko has any issues, then you trust Kevin Lankinen to play, because he has done so to a very good level this year. And ultimately, that's not a decision you absolutely have to make this summer, because you've got time with Demko in terms of figuring out his long-term future, although I know trading goaltenders in season or at the deadline may not be the easiest thing. So, there is a sort of worst case scenario to that side of things as well. And that's ultimately what ratchets up the stakes on this offseason so much, is, as much as you can control a lot of these things as managers, and you can make decisions about your players, there are bets that this management group is going to have to place this summer that are somewhat out of their hands. And those two biggest bets are a bet on the health of Thatcher Demko. So either betting that he will remain healthy and get back to being a Vezina caliber goaltender, or potentially betting against that and moving on from him and putting your trust in Kevin Lankinen, or with Elias Pettersson, betting that he can have a good summer and get back to his high level, or betting against that he can do that and ultimately moving on from a distressed asset and potentially having that blow up in your face as well. So I don't envy these guys. It's been a very hard season, and for Jim Rutherford and Patrick Alvin, it's going to be a very challenging offseason as well, and one that is scrutinized more than maybe any summer that we've had in this city in, I don't know, a decade, which says a lot, because there have been some summers that have felt really pivotal, and ultimately the organization for the most part hasn't been able to capitalize on any positive momentum, whether it was the bubble season and then what happened with all the players that left after that playoff run, or whether it was last year and then ultimately all the injuries and issues that led to the departure of JT Miller too. So it's going to be fascinating. It's going to be a heck of a summer to watch. But yeah, my top two things on the list are certainty at center ice, certainty of the goaltending position, and after that, everything else is a distant third, I would think.
Batch, I'm sure you've seen the comments from Brock Besser and our colleague Ian McIntyre's latest piece at sportsnet.ca. And just, again, Besser says, honestly, it's unlikely at this point that he'll remain with the Canucks. He goes on to say, it sucks. It's unfortunate. I'm just trying to play good hockey, and then I'll worry about everything after that. We all know it's been a roller coaster of a year. There's been a lot of different things. What was your reaction when you saw Brock Besser's comments to IMAC?
Yeah, I think it's just him putting a voice to what we've kind of understood to be the reality for a while. And you know what? There is time for that to change. He doesn't become an unrestricted free agent till July 1st. There are plenty of conversations that the organization will have about their overall direction, not just the direction with that player, that could alter their thinking. And, you know, there is a school of thought that says it might be good to have some certainty at other positions if you're going to potentially have massive turnover in other areas of the roster, like we've already seen on the blue line, like we could see at the center ice position or potentially even in the crease going forward. But ultimately, I think this is a style conversation where this is a team that wants to get faster, wants to get more direct. If they want Rick Tocchet back as their head coach, and they've made it very clear that they do, that's the style of hockey he wants to play. That's the style of hockey that they want their team to play. Does that fit with what Brock Besser has done? And not to take anything away from what he's meant to this team or, you know, an important fabric of the community he's been here in Vancouver and the goals he's scored and, you know, the good impact he's had on this organization, because all of those things are true and all of those things, you know, are not something that you should forget or move on from lightly. But ultimately, I think that's probably where this is heading, is this management group would like to invest in more straight line players who can get in on the forecheck, can be more effective in that regard, and could play with a bit more speed. And you can understand why. The league's getting faster, and not that Besser's a bad skater, but he's never been a burner either. So, you know, that's ultimately where I see things going. And it's disappointing because, you know, I know Drancer can speak to this as well, but
yeah,
you know,
he rocks.
He's an awesome guy.
Yep.
He's tremendous to deal with from the perspective of the media. We're going to miss having him in that Canuck dressing from our perspective too, but
he's a good player.
Ultimately,
man,
it might be the right thing for team and for player.
Yeah. It's going to him with Boldy and Eriksson Ek is going to be a sick second line next year.
It's if he does leave, and it's not done, right? He says it's unlikely. He's not officially closing
no,
the door.
Jamie, he said, honestly,
that's true.
It's unlikely.
And it's going to be a winner. I mean, he was really, if you want to even call this last, you know, 8 years an era of Canucks hockey, he was the start of it.
For sure he was. Yeah. The drafted in the McDavid draft.
Yeah.
An awesome selection. Won a natty at Nodak, joined the Canucks with his teammates, Troy Stetcher, right? And they were a ray of hope in a pretty dark time for this franchise. Was a consummate pro and got better, right? I mean, not a lot more you can ask from a player than what Besser brought to Vancouver. Batch, what do you think about my take that when you put honestly in front of that comment, it's pretty loaded as a modifier? It's like, honestly, Batch, I really bought your line about Canucks optimism. Honestly, I really did.
Honestly, Drance, I can tell you didn't. So that's fine. Yeah, I mean, you know, because it's in print, I don't want to read into any ulterior meaning without actually hearing the audio, because, you know, just like someone can text you and you think they're mad and then you meet up with them and they're like, oh no, I was totally fine. I wasn't mad at all. Like, I'm cautious to try and read into tone too much from a piece, a written piece. But that said, I think we can all understand the direction this is likely going, and it's clear that Besser does as well. And the fact that he's willing to talk about it, I think, means that he understands that he's probably playing his final few games as Canuck here this week.
Batch, you did your job admirably well today. You came on and you did your best to cheer us up. We appreciate it.
No worries. Hey, those clouds will blow away eventually, yeah, and the summer sun will hit.
Although I think the rain clouds are coming in here right now. But
Batch, also, it says right here that no, they won't.
Permanent rain forever.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Batch. We appreciate it, man.
Sounds good. Thanks, boys. Have a good one.
That is Brendan Batchelor, voice of the Canucks here on Sportsnet 650.
The problem is that if you want to get to a better climate, you have to go through the storm.
You never heard growing up, like, yeah, it rains a lot, but I mean, that's why we have all the incredible trees and greenery here.
No,
you never
man.
Heard that?
Well, no. That's what? Not how my family did it. We have lots of rules about the rain, though.
What, like what?
My grandmother used to say, as a way of like, because really more than anything, what I was taught was not like be grateful for the rain. It was ignore the rain and go about your business. Mm. That was sort of my family. So
see, I like the rain. You don't like sitting inside when it's really storming out and you can like hear the rain
there's
on
like
the window.
Moments where it's cozy. I have I have skylights too, so I get like the really like
now we're
dramatic.
Talking. Yeah.
When I can tell when to walk my dog because the sound stops and I'm like, gotta go. So my grandma's commentary was always, or my nana was always, her commentary was, it never rains all day. It never rains all day.
Sometimes it does.
I know, but that was
nana.
How dare you? She was a saint. But the point is not that it actually doesn't.
Yeah, I get it.
The point is, you know, find your windows and go about your business. And then the other one is, there's no such thing as bad weather, only bad clothes.
You can always dress appropriately. I like that.
So I think
I'm back in on Nana.
Yeah, you should be in on Nana. Nana was awesome. The other one was my Nana's advice for flying. Take a Valium and a double G&T.
Great advice. Can't beat that.
Rock.
All right. We'll take a final break here on the show. Last segment, open segment. Send your texts in. I think we can dive back into your off-season to-do list, and especially the Rick Tocchet side of things there as well, in the final segment here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.
Honestly, Batch, I really bought your line about Canucks optimism. Honestly, really did.
Honestly, Drance, I can tell you did.
Who throws a shoe? Honestly.
You want me to think that you're wild?
Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance. We are live from the Kintec studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and reno warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. We will get into the inbox, I think, at some point in this segment. But as I mentioned, your latest piece up at The Athletic right now, looking at the Canucks to-do list for the offseason and some of the priority, you know, not just we're not getting into the target season or anything like that, like go get this player, but kind of big picture conceptual stuff of what they need to get done. And number one is, in your words, clarify Rick Tocchet's future, ideally with a multi-year extension. And now that the team is officially out of the playoffs, and with Quinn Hughes throwing his weight behind Tocchet again so publicly, so forcefully in his commentary to IMAC, this is back to being very much a front burner topic of conversation. And I think your point in the piece is well taken, that it's not even so much about just our debates about Rick Tocchet and the system and, oh, does he get enough offensively and all of that. We know the lay of the land here. The team really likes Rick Tocchet. Like, from their perspective, it has nothing to do with what they with questions about Rick Tocchet as a coach. They love Rick Tocchet. Quinn Hughes, who's a partner in winning with your organization and was just talking about all his obligations that he's trying to fulfill and kind of implicitly reminding you of your obligations, he really likes Rick Tocchet. So it's not just make a decision on your coach. I think as you get at, you ideally would just like to get it done smoothly, quickly, drama free, and kind of start like the ideal way to start the offseason. Hammer this out quickly, smoothly, and in a way that's beneficial for all parties right at the beginning to kind of anchor where you're going from there.
Yeah. No leaks, no muss, no fuss, stability. Turn the page on what's been a miserable, drama filled
stability is the perfect word for it, because this season has been so unstable. You need to start reasserting that stability and demonstrating it. And I mean, that goes for your own players. That goes as a signal to potential UFA guys on July 1st that you're trying to attract, right? Like I don't think that can be understated here. The importance of signaling that stability early for the franchise.
I'm going to tell you what, Jamie, I think it's a little late to signal that to unrestricted free agents.
Oh, you got to start trying again.
I know, but
it's better than the opposite.
Well, I just, you know, we haven't talked about it, and this isn't probably the time to get into it too much, but, you know, the way that the Pettersson-Miller thing, for example, played out is going to have an impact,
mm-hmm.
right? That's
at least if you get Tocchet done early, though, at least you have a story to tell that's like, wow, that Pettersson, I mean, we've never seen anything like that. That was crazy. Yeah, we had to move on from Miller, but now we've got Tocchet back. Hughes is here. You know what I mean? Like, we're, this season got out of control, but we've turned the page, and you signal that by signing Rick Tocchet to a multi-year extension.
Unfortunately, I think given this team's overall positioning, given the tax rate locally, given what this club has been through, the intense scrutiny around it, like, I think this club's going to be really hard pressed to get those UFA meetings, whether or not they conduct their business in this way or not. But I think from a Q rating perspective, right, especially with how the deadline played out, especially with how mm-hmm. the team has performed, you know, projecting that stability to the fan base. Like, I think you're, it's not like you're not going to be able to find players to come here in unrestricted free agency. You're just going to, you know, the top,
you're gonna have to pay it.
The top guys who have a ton of options who, like, will get reached out to by 18 teams. You know what I mean? Immediately when the market opens, probably before. Those are going to be hard meetings to get. But obviously, you know, in the tier that this team usually shops an unrestricted free agency in, which, by the way, they've done pretty well at, right? Like, those are the deals you're still going to be able to get done. You're still going to be able to offer a guy the most money and be the most attractive deal. There's still a lot of examples of guys coming and playing for Rick Tocchet and sort of rebuilding their value or building their value or taking the opportunity presented to them and making a significant dent as a result. Dakota Joshua would be like a strong example of that, right? So those dynamics are still in Vancouver's favor. I'm not trying to cast this in apocalyptic terms. But, you know, in calling Sam Bennett's agent, for example, right? That's going to be where...
That's tough.
That's going to be where it's tough, given sort of how this season has played out, although you'd hope that the familiarity that Tocchet and Sam Bennett built at the Four Nations might help. Anyway, point being, projecting stability, beginning to build that credibility back, yes, sure, among agents and free agents too, but certainly in this city. Even though Tocchet's, like, come into a fair bit of detractors over the course of the season, like, his Q rating's pretty severely dented, I'd say, among Canucks fans, as a result of how this season has played out. Would you agree?
Oh, it's extremely different than it was last year.
Yeah.
Like, night and day.
Yeah. And personally, I don't view that as especially fair, but I know fans are frustrated by the lack of offense and the style of play. You know, I think fans are frustrated by, like, Lekkerimäki getting scratched and this perception of young players not getting an opportunity and on and on. And some of it's reasonable, some of it's not. Like, I would say, you know, you bring Tocchet back, you got to get a power play coach. Like, a really experienced power play mm-hmm. coach should be a must for this organization to recruit and acquire this offseason, in my mind.
Yeah, somebody texted in, actually, it was Mike from Brockville, the urologist. Do you think management wants Tocchet to change his assistant coaches or support staff at all? I don't know if I would phrase it as like it's a point of conflict with them, but I think from the outside looking in, what you're like, you need a power play specialist coach.
You could add a body. I don't think it's about replacing. I think you could add a body. I mean, right now they have what, three guys on the bench?
Yep.
And then a bunch of guys like the Sedins and Gonchar who are involved for sure, but aren't on the bench and, you know, don't seem to have full-time portfolios. I just think, and maybe it is Henrik or whatever have mm-hmm. you.
And Jordan and the Ridge Texan, why can't the Sedins help with the PP?
They do.
More about having a permanent, always behind the bench guy who's
correct.
Running it.
Yeah, you.
And that's not the role they've been in yet.
And I'd have to like do the research to absolutely confirm, but I can't think of another team that does it this way. You know, and so if you're going to be the outlier, it has to work.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't this season. So for me, that's the low-hanging fruit. That's like question one that I'd have if I was a GM with a coach sort of and this reporting structure, you know, would be, hey, like, should we be better than 12th in the NHL in power play conversion rate, given that we have Quinn Hughes and we had JT Miller for half the season and on? You know, I mean, Jason King, who we let go of, had a top 10 conversion rate across two seasons. Why have we gone backwards there? You know, those would just be questions that I'd want to ask.
Yep.
So, you know, that for me anyway, that's like the fairest grounds to criticize Tocchet. I get, look, if you don't have an aesthetic love of the structural hockey that they play, fair enough. I think that's fair and completely understandable, but I don't know how this team wins without that. You know what? Anyway, getting Tocchet done, no muss, no fuss, I just think is crucial. Crucial in terms of just starting this offseason, projecting confidence, stability in a way that this organization, you know, got away from over the course of the season. And I'd add Volander.
Yeah, that's the other interesting one. As a piece of business, you can take care of really quickly, right? Yeah. Like over the next few days. Possibly tomorrow. Possibly tonight, but probably tomorrow.
It's an
depending
ELC.
On how this game
it's
goes.
Paint by numbers. You know, like max schedule B bonuses are not that big a deal. You know, like he's an 11th overall pick who went the college route. Max schedule A bonuses. Who cares? Like, what are we talking about? We're talking about 850 times three. Or maybe it's 950 with some cap inflation, but it's like realistically we're talking about less than $3 million of possible money that you only pay in the event that the player is like top 10 among all rookie defensemen in scoring, or top five or ten on the team in terms of plus minus. It's like for the most part, you're happy to pay these bonuses if you have to, because it means Volander's been really good for you on an entry level deal. Like, who cares? Get that done.
Yeah. And again, you talk about that idea of rebuilding confidence in the marketplace, right? And just giving up. Like, the Abbotsford Canucks has a potential to be that anyways, a positive thing for fans to focus on here now that the NHL season is officially over, or will be officially over after the 82 games.
Especially if fans are watching some, like, you know, Volander. I'm trying to think of a lefty down there. Like some,
Kudryavtsev?
Yeah, some Volander Kudryavtsev top four pair. You know, succeed in the Calder Cup playoffs. Like, that would be exciting, I think, for Canucks.
Yeah, a long playoff run for Abbotsford, especially if it's with Tom Volander, and you can start imagining him coming to camp next year. Like, that's a big deal.
And getting big, like, Atu Ratu moments, and Lekaramäki scores big goal, and on, right? I mean, that would be huge, I think, in terms of how we're talking about this team's future and their young options in-house.
Huge.
Huge.
Yeah, absolutely huge. So I think those, and the thing about those is they're both so immediate, right? Like, so much of what we're going to talk about with off-season to-do list is stuff that's July 1st or around the draft. Like, hey, make a decision at some point on Elias Pettersson and explore trades. That probably happens around the draft if you're exploring trades. The coach thing and Volander are things you can get done in the immediate future to set the table for having a successful offseason in other ways, right? And I think that's it's really important just to kind of do whatever you can to wash the bad taste of this season out of everyone's mouths, out of your own mouths, and move on and try to get back to the business of building a contender for next season. I think it is really, really important. This text comes in 650-650 from the Dunbar Lumber text line. Hear me out. Is it still robbing Peter to pay Paul for a second or third time if you've done it in the past to create a stronger blue line and you've worked your way into a spot now where you actually have a pretty deep blue line and could afford to lose a piece? Could that not just be framed as appropriate asset management? I think there's something to that. And the difference is with the past examples, right, where you have the depth at center, you trade Bo Horvat to get Filip Hronek, then you eventually trade JT Miller and get Marcus Pettersson in. And now you're like, well, now we have this really deep defense core, but our center depth is just completely shot. The difference with the defense has been that it's been paired with having you spent a lot of draft capital on young defenders that you feel good about, right? And you're starting to see them in DPD come and look like an NHL player. We'll see about Tom Volander. You know, they acquire Victor Mancini, maybe more trade bait, but another guy who's playing NHL minutes for them. I know they like Sawyer Mineo, right? You go down the list. You did not have anything close to that. In fact, quite the opposite. You had a complete lack of young centers in your organization where you were when you were trading away certainly Bo Horvat and JT Miller. You got Atu Ratu in the Bo Horvat thing, but you know we're still waiting to see what his NHL future looks like. So I think the texture makes a fair point. Is it's different dealing from at a certain level you have to deal from a position of strength.
Yeah, surplus.
That just makes sense. And I don't think we should inherently look at it as like, oh, they're shuffling the deck chairs again. They're robbing Peter to pay Paul if you trade either an established defender or a young defender to help your options up front. Because the difference here is they actually put in the work outside of those trades through the draft. I'm not saying it's like this overwhelming strength or this overwhelming pipeline or anything, but at least you can see how they could trade a piece and still have a solid blue line going forward.
Yeah, at least it's a surplus. I mean, it really is, right? Like, it's not a joke surplus. It's not us being kind, you know?
Yeah.
But I do think you have to be cognizant, too, of selling high when you can, of not falling in love with XYZ guy, right? Like, Mancini's played pretty well down the stretch in some ways, and in some ways I think there have been apparent limitations in terms of his puck handling, areas for growth and development.
Mm-hmm.
And what's sort of difficult, right, is like he's also the guy who would have the least value, right? And ideally, yes, you're not trading the guy with the least value. You're finding a guy who doesn't have a ton of exchange value, but who has like productivity value, who can actually play for you. And then moving up to trade like a larger piece like a Volander or Hronek. But I don't know. I don't see having an appetite to do that. I think you're probably better off bundling stuff, right?
Yeah, using Mancini as like the equivalent of what? Like a third round pick that you put in?
Oh, I think you can probably do better than that. He's an NHL-ready right-handed. Like,
that's,
you know,
true. Who's 22?
At the end of the day, if you're a team holding a second round, even a second round pick, right? Like,
yeah, if you're like Chicago with all of your extra second round picks, is, well, that, you know what I mean?
But they have a lot of blue line depth. But
whatever.
But no, I'm actually,
you know, conceptually, right? You know what I mean? Like one of these teams is like, hey, we have 3 second round picks. Like,
totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or just like, why would we draft a guy in the second round who we're going to wait 4 years to maybe get to this level when we can have this guy in our lineup tomorrow, mm-hmm, and he's 23 or 22 and right handed and big and skates well? That sounds pretty good to us, right? So, you know, but Canucks don't want to go out and get picks. They need to go out and get top six forwards.
No, but it's part of the package
that you can do. So it's like Mancini plus Hoglander.
So whether if there's a team that views him and is happy to take him, and that's the equivalent of you throwing in a second round pick, or you do the trade first and get the second round pick, whatever. You know what I mean? It's building out your assets that you can use to go chase that forward.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's,
I mean, second round, if you think you can get it, like, if you think that's equivalent value, that's not bad for Mancini, to be perfectly honest. And as you say, as, like, the guy kind of far that you're probably least excited about going forward on the NHL roster right now of the young players.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Unless they are really excited about what he can be, in which case you can consider something even bigger, which this team probably has to do. Right? I mean, I don't see how you can go into the summer with Lankinen having been extended and not explore what the exchange value on, hey, do you want to hold the Demko contract year lottery ticket?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because that would surely be appealing to teams.
You would think so.
Like, he's incredible when he's on.
I think especially if you're one of these teams that's like constantly running into goaltending problems in the playoffs.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're like, man, we're really good. We just need that guy. And he's here for 1 year at $5 million.
Yeah.
That's pretty interesting.
A team like Carolina,
mm-hmm,
right? One of those types of clubs. Colorado, if Blackwood doesn't get it done.
Yeah, that's a good shout.
You know?
For sure.
Look, there's all sorts of interesting options, but I don't think you accomplish what you want to accomplish without some pain, without some deals that make us go like, whoa, right? Or at least gauging the market on some of the players that would make us go, whoa.
Yeah.
Patterson, Demko, Hoglander. Like, that's those guys are Mancini,
mm-hmm,
maybe Volander, Hronek, but I'd be pretty reluctant on both.
I'd be surprised. I shouldn't say I'd be surprised with Demko and Garland, because I do think, you know, somebody texted it earlier. I don't have it in front of me.
Did I say Garland? I said Hronek.
I thought you said Garland first. You said maybe Hronek or Volander.
Okay.
I think you said like Demko, Garland, Hoglander. Maybe Volander.
Patterson.
Sorry, maybe not Garland. Yeah, anyways.
That's okay. Garland too. Like,
somebody texted in earlier, do you think management is like aware of the need for the top end talent? And I think absolutely. Like 100%. They are.
Oh, they're obsessed with it.
Yeah. So when you have that as the framework, I think we should at a certain level expect some surprising or bold moves, because once Jim Rutherford locks in on something as a major team need, he's pretty committed. He's pretty motivated and pretty committed to going getting it done, even if it ruffles some feathers, even if it surprises some people, even if the cost paid is a little much in some people's eyes. He typically goes out and finds a way to get it done. So I think it's interesting that the texter asked that. Maybe people haven't fully internalized, like, just how, as you say, obsessed they are with it, just how aware of it they are, that they need to go out and add that top-end talent. But I think that's the framework we should be using to look at this offseason, is they know they are dead set on it. It's an absolute must for this team to take that step towards being a contender. And when you think about it like that, like, yeah, probably not a lot is going to be off the table for this team, because that's not how they operate. Once they decide they want someone like that, once they decide they need a piece, they typically are pretty motivated to get it done.
Last thing, we've got like, what, 50 seconds?
Sure.
But the issue with narrow paths, as we've seen across the last week, right? Like, as the Canucks playoff odds have gone to zero, right? The like things that they need to happen, the outs available to them have like rapidly diminished. You know what I mean? And then we got to a point where after that Dallas comeback, it was like, if, right, Minnesota loses all their games, but loses to Calgary, like they needed to lose to Calgary, yes, like in OT, you know, yeah. And it's like literally there's only one script. Like, you're truly in the end game now. One script to make it. As a path narrows, it really becomes exclusive to like one, right? This team has followed a narrow path. We've discussed it ad nauseum. And now, like, we're here. It's like the one path, right, that this club's going to need to chart here to
go
keep.
All out for the high-end talent.
To win for Quinn, yeah.
Yeah, win for Quinn. That's right, win to keep Quinn. All right, that's the show for today. We're back tomorrow for the Friday edition of Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650.